Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is, wait for it, senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Ships at a distance have every man's wish on board.
All right.
Today we're going to talk about a boat.
Are you doing that to goad me or the people writing in?
What? That it should be called a ship and
yes,
not a boat?
Yes.
Okay, wait. Before we get started, this is a personal pet peeve
okay.
of Jonathan Strickland.
All right.
In fact, I want there to be a special musical sting for personal pet peeve of Jonathan Strickland. Make a note of it. Anyway, so my personal pet peeve in today's episode always involves things that are very difficult to define,
mm-hmm.
and that there are not specific parameters where a thing is categorized as one thing versus another thing.
It's a ship.
Now, here's an example. Ship versus boat. So, a ship technically is a vessel large enough to carry a boat, and a boat is technically a vessel small enough to be carried upon a ship. I have a problem with this. There should be a specific size where a boat becomes a ship or a ship is degraded down to a boat. Also, mountain versus hill. What's up with that?
Jonathan,
a mountain is taller than a hill,
it.
And a hill is smaller than a mountain.
So
this is my personal pet peeve.
I'm pretty sure
yeah.
that the Titanic is large enough to be considered a ship.
Okay, fine. So this boat
even now
was made back in – all right, so let's talk about this. All right, so it's famous, right? Obviously famous because of the disaster, the sinking of the Titanic.
I was expecting you to say because of that documentary on Titanic.
There are many documentaries on Titanic, and some of them are actually documentaries.
Well, yeah, and the reason that it came up was because we just passed the 100th anniversary.
Also, Leonardo DiCaprio was in The Office the other day. That's not true.
The sinking of the Titanic.
And Kate Winslet was apologizing for her performance. No, that's not true either.
That's really sweet. So we have just passed the people talking about the Titanic and it's sort of romanticized in a way, not because of the movie, but because I guess because it was supposedly unsinkable, because it was so immensely Titanic.
Yeah, and it was also an era of romanticism.
Like sure.
Again, one of those things where you look back on a time and you romanticize it because, it seems this sort of ethereal time that we can only imagine now.
Yeah.
I mean, we can see the pictures in the film and everything, but still it feels like otherworldly mm-hmm. because it's not our experience. Yes, the Titanic sank on April 14th, 1912.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it had 2,208 passengers and 899 officers and crew members aboard.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those, about 1,513 or so, the records vary depending on
sure.
who you ask, about 1,513 to 1,517 or somewhere thereabouts died.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there were only room for 1,176 passengers in the lifeboats.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have enough lifeboats for the entire crew and passenger list. And it's certainly one of the most famous tragedies to happen in the travel industry. It's one of those things that is legendary, really. And the legend has just grown over the years mm-hmm. since the sinking. A little bit more information about the people who died, just something that I thought was kind of interesting and tragic.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So there were 329 first-class passengers mm-hmm. on the Titanic. 123 of them died. That's 37% of the – actually, all of them are dead now. But at the time, 37% of the first-class passengers died.
Right.
Third-class – passengers. There were 710 of them. 527 of them died mm-hmm. in the sinking of the Titanic, which is about 74% of them. So 37% first class passengers, 74% third class passengers perished in the sinking.
Yes.
Which has led to quite a bit of discussion about how the third class passengers were treated. And how preferential treatment was given to first class passengers, and there are plenty of conflicting reports about crew members actually restraining third class passengers from getting to the lifeboats until all the first class passengers were taken care of, or as many as possible. So lots of different reasons why this tragedy has lived on in our minds. But we wanted to talk a little bit about the technology aboard the Titanic, the development of the Titanic, and also some technology that was developed as a result of the or at least pushed forward as a result of the Titanic sinking.
Mm-hmm. I would say that the story of the Titanic is intertwined with technology.
Yes.
I mean, the ship was supposedly cutting edge. It had been theoretically designed to prevent something like this from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, it had a lot of high-tech equipment on board. It also, its equipment had some success. I would say that some of the systems did exactly what they were supposed to. They performed very, very well.
Yeah.
And other systems failed terribly, leading to, ultimately to more passengers dying. And, there are things like the number of lifeboats, which are not necessarily technological, issues that were, that were problems. And of course they were problems,
yes.
But we wanted to focus specifically on the technologies because, at the time the ship was designed to be, top of the line. And in fact,
right.
it was, I believe, the largest ship, that had been built for cruises at that time.
It and its sister ships, because there were two other, the Gigantic and the
Britannic.
No, not the Britannic, which was originally called the Britannic. It was the Olympic.
Oh, right.
Olympia.
Right.
Maybe it was the Olympia.
Yeah, the Britannic was a sister ship, but not.
Yeah, so but those three ships, what happened was back in 1907,
mm-hmm.
there was a dinner meeting between J. Bruce Ismay, who mm-hmm. was the son of Thomas Ismay, who was the founder of the White Star Line ocean liner
mm-hmm.
company. So this was a company that was managing and maintaining these huge ocean liners, which was the way to travel back then.
Oh, yeah.
If you were going to go overseas. But the problem was that, or perhaps the opportunity, I should say, the opportunity was there to create luxury liners that would improve passenger comfort. And the idea was by providing this, these comforts, more people would want to travel and you would have a much more successful business because mm-hmm. the liners previously were pretty plain. You know, it was just you would get a very plain, lodgings and you would be on board the ship for days and days trying to cross oceans. And it wasn't terribly luxurious or comfortable. So the idea was let's change that. Let's make these luxury liners that can cater to the comfort of passengers. And so, Ismay had a dinner with a fellow named Lord Peary. Mm-hmm. And Lord Peary was the chairman of Harland and Wolff Shipbuilders. And the two of them started talking about a couple of liners that had recently launched, the Mauritania and the Lusitania.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these ships were larger than any previous ones at that point and were known for their amenities.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ismay was thinking, we could do that. Why don't we design some ships that can even put these behind and make these seem primitive in comparison? And mm-hmm. the Titanic was one of the three ships designed to do such a thing. And it was, at the time, one of the largest vessels on the ocean. It was 882 and a half feet long, 268 meters or so, almost 269 meters, 92.5 feet wide, which is about 28 meters. And it weighed about 45,000 tons. So big ship, which meant a couple things.
Mm-hmm.
It meant, one, that maneuvering such a ship was challenging.
Yes.
Because it was so large that it was not the kind of ship that's going to stop on a dime or turn in a very tight radius. In order to change the course of this ship and to change its speed, required quite a bit of leeway, which was one of the big problems that the Titanic encountered when it had its famous tragedy on a few days later after it launched. So that was one of the main things about it, was just its sheer size. It had these enormous turbines that were operated off of the exhaust steam.
Mm-hmm.
There was these reciprocating engines aboard the Titanic, two of them, that would create steam. The engines themselves were almost 40 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And the steam would power these turbines that would turn these three-blade propellers that were 23 and a half feet in diameter. It's about 7 meters or so. And there was also a four-blade propeller that was 17 feet in diameter, or about 5 meters, that was located near the ship's rudder, which helped the Titanic attain speeds close to 24 knots.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this massive ship and this huge engine and these big turbines and propellers to help move it through the water. And yes, it did not maneuver nimbly, right?
Nimbly.
It was not a nimble type of vessel.
It was
very impressive, but not designed to, you know, do slalom courses unless they were miles wide.
Yeah. And this is when technology plays a part too. Should we talk about the probably the most famous technological system?
I've got a couple of ideas of what you could be talking about. Are you talking about Marconi's invention?
Yes.
Oh,
I was
right,
talking about Bill Marconi's invention.
Bill?
Yes.
Bill Marconi? All right, fine. So Billy, where'd you get Bill from? I'd go with Gil Marconi.
Gil?
Yeah. Anyway, Marconi, of course, famous for not inventing the radio because Tesla did that. But if you've heard...
Well, he is famous for inventing the radio.
He's famous for inventing the radio, but there are plenty of people who argue that Tesla did actually invent the radio.
Right.
That was me poking fun at Marconi. But Marconi...
He'll play the Mamba.
He certainly made the radio a practical invention.
Yes.
As opposed to just a curiosity.
Well, Marconi's thing was radio. Tesla was... you know, sort of busy with all kinds of different things.
Yeah, he was a little less focused. But he did patent radio, and then Marconi got the patent overturned. Anyway, that's a different story we've talked about before in this podcast. So Marconi has this radio system that ships were starting to use at the time the Titanic launched. There were several ships that had radio systems, but they were still relatively new, and they could only really transmit radio waves in short little bursts. So they were perfect for things like Morse code, but they were not designed for voice transmission.
Right, right.
So,
it was a spark transmitter.
Right. You had to have operators on board your ship who would be able to take messages, convert them to Morse code and send them, and as well as receive messages. And the Titanic had two operators, which was unusual for a lot of ships. Many ships only had the one. And in fact, it was fairly common practice aboard these ships for, you know, at certain times of night, the operator would turn in. Like, it would be the end of the operator shift and they'd go to bed and there'd be no one manning the radio at that time.
That will prove to be important as well.
So, there were the two who were aboard the Titanic were Harold Bride, who survived the ordeal, and Jack Phillips, who went down with the ship. And these two men were in charge of manning this radio and monitoring messages that were coming in and sending messages that were going out. One of the problems that happened that helped contribute to this tragedy, a lot of people talk about how the Titanic received several reports, at least four reports from four different ships, about ice in the area directly ahead of where the Titanic was going.
Mm-hmm.
And that if the Titanic had heeded these reports, perhaps they could have either altered the course or changed the speed, and maybe tragedy could have been averted. But here's the issue. Back at this time where people are using these transmitters, it all depended on how powerful your transmitter was, whether or not you would pick something up. You could overpower someone else's transmitter because everyone's just essentially broadcasting full blast.
Yeah.
Now, there's no fine tuning at this point. It's either on or it's off.
Right.
And there were a lot of people who wanted to send messages out from the Titanic because it was a very novel thing to do.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people on the shores of the United States who wanted to send messages to the people aboard the Titanic. So the operators were constantly busy sending out messages. And in fact, at one point, a message came in from I think it was the California.
Yes, the RMS Californian.
Yeah, Californian, sorry.
And this was about 11 p.m., and I won't bother trying to affect my poor version of a British accent, but it says, "Say, old man, we are stopped and surrounded by ice." And
say, old man, what's stopped and surrounded by ice?
See, now you've got the both that and the early 20th century movie. I'm talking way too fast.
It's a dirigible competition.
And about 10 minutes later, the telegraph operator on Titanic, and this just gets me, and it probably will you too, when you hear it, the Titanic sends back, "Keep out, shut up, I am busy, I am working Cape Race," which is on the coast of Canada.
Yes, so what was going on was that the operator aboard the Titanic was communicating with Cape Race and
sending personal messages.
Exactly, it was all these messages that were coming in and going out. To and from passengers on the Titanic, and folks on the shore. So the problem here is that for an operator to be able to hear these messages, now these, depending on the power of the transmitter, these radio messages could go a really long distance. Like the Titanic could broadcast 500 miles in the daytime and 2,000 miles at night.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this, how using shortwave radio, you can bounce radio waves off the ionosphere and make it go further. We talked about that in our numbers station podcast, remember? Mm-hmm. Well, that works best at night. During the daytime, the ionosphere it behaves differently than it does at night. So at night, the Titanic could broadcast these messages much further. And, the problem is that in order to listen in for incoming messages, you had to listen very carefully. Well, if another ship nearby was broadcasting, then that broadcast would overpower any incoming messages from the shore, because the shore is much further away. The signal's weaker. Mm-hmm. So the signal from a nearby ship would be much louder. So the shut up part is really the operator saying, I have to turn the sensitivity of this all the way up so I could pick up messages. So when you talk, it's like someone shouting with a bullhorn right next to my ear.
Yeah.
So please shut up because I'm trying to listen to these messages. Now, if they had actually heeded that warning, sent that up to the bridge. Now, according to some reports, the bridge did receive a couple of different reports about ice, but not all of them. So, mm-hmm. I think most of the reports I read suggest that two of the reports that came in never got to the bridge. Mm-hmm. And although, based upon the way that everything turned out, maybe it wouldn't have mattered anyway.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like a lot of the crew were fairly confident that, they could maneuver through the ice without any problem, which, as we see, is not the case. At least half of the messages did not get to the bridge anyway. So, the radio was very much state of the art at the time.
Yeah.
However, it was still so primitive. The fact that you couldn't just switch a channel
and
have a dedicated channel so that you didn't have to worry about overwriting someone else's messages, that was a problem. And the fact that since it was such a novelty and everyone wanted to use it to communicate was a problem, because it meant that the operator couldn't actually concentrate on really important information coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Another problem with the radio being so early is that they had different designations for "I am in trouble."
Yeah. Now, officially, the one that we're probably most familiar with, SOS, had actually been adopted.
No, it mostly had been adopted by the German Navy.
Well, the German Navy did that first. They did, the Marconi Company first set up CQD as its distress call.
Which is
I not say that any better?
That's what the Titanic was using, was CQD.
Yeah, and basically that's actually a homophonic French. For CQ being SECU, which is short for Securité, basically meaning, help, and D being for distress. So basically saying, hey, I need help, I'm in distress.
Yeah.
Now, Germany, that was in February 1st, 1904. Now, a little bit more than a year later, on April 1st, 1905, Germany said, no, we're going to go with SOS. It's three dots, three dashes, three dots. It's easy to say.
Yeah, it's very easy to transmit, and it's very easy to
understand.
Detect.
Mm-hmm. It had saved other ships. Right. In June 10th, 1909, the Slavonia used SOS.
Yeah, that's what SOS stands for, is save other ships.
No.
I know.
Actually, it doesn't stand for anything.
No,
a lot of people think it stands for save our ship.
No. The reason is, just as Chris said, it's because the Morse code for it is very easy to transmit and detect. That's the only reason SOS is used as an alert, is because once you hear it, once you hear that, you got it.
Yeah. It's pretty simple, and I think a lot of people now know exactly what it means. As a matter of fact, somebody had it for their ringtone on their phone.
Fantastic.
Somewhere, and I'm going, does somebody actually,
is someone in distress?
Yeah. How many movies has somebody been captured and, locked in some cellar thing, and they start, hammering on a pipe somewhere?
Right. They
SOS.
They pull out their keys and they just start tapping against the pipe. Yeah.
And then MacGyver realizes that he's got a bottle cap, some bubble gum, and a knife, and he can turn that into a nuclear reactor.
Yeah. If only he had a duct tape, he could have made a time machine.
Oh, man. That would have been great.
Anyway, yeah. So the problem here is that with the different codes for distress, not all ships understood what the Titanic was sending out. Once the Titanic did start sending out distress signals, some of the nearby ships didn't know to respond, and it wasn't until later in the night when they started to – the operators decided to actually include SOS as well as CQD.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a list of some of the messages that were sent out.
I do as well.
So there's one at 12:15 a.m. Actually, before we do that, I should go through really quickly and just do a quick time of events, like what happened when,
mm-hmm.
because then that'll give some context to these messages.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at 11:35 p.m. on April 13th that they spotted the iceberg, where it was about a quarter of a mile ahead. Unfortunately, they would have needed at least...
I thought it was the 14th. I had it down as the
14th. 14th is... Oh, you're right, you're right, you're right. The 15th is when it actually sunk. 14th was when it struck. I'm sorry, April 14th. Chris is completely right. So April 14th, 11:35 p.m. is when they spot the iceberg. It's a quarter mile ahead. Now, unfortunately, they would have needed a half mile to actually stop the ship or move around it.
Mm-hmm.
So the best they could do is kind of skirt the edge of the iceberg. But here's the thing about icebergs. The part you see up on top is just a tiny fraction of the iceberg. There's a whole lot of iceberg underneath the waters, the water line.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was that part of this underwater section of the iceberg jutted out and it scraped the side of the Titanic. It actually made six gashes in the Titanic's hull, and we'll talk about why that happened too.
Yeah, it wasn't a head-on collision.
No, it hit just one side of the Titanic, but that was enough to cause it the problem. So at 11:35, they spot the iceberg. 11:40, so just 5 minutes later, that's when the Titanic scrapes against the iceberg. And then by midnight, the watertight compartments, of which there were 16 within the Titanic, they start to fill up. Now, six of them, five or six, depending on who you ask, were filling up with water. Originally, the shipbuilders said that the Titanic would be perfectly fine if three of those watertight compartments flooded. It would still be able to sail as if there were no problems. And it could continue with four of them flooded, but it would have some problems. But with five or six flooded, it was just a matter of time before the Titanic would sink. And I'll go into more about that in a little bit too. So at 1:20 in the morning, the bow of the Titanic begins to pitch into the water. So the weight from the water coming into those watertight containment areas is making the ship tilt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually causing more problems with flooding. Then at 2 a.m., the bow starts to submerge and the propellers actually lift out of the water because of the weight from the water in the bow end of the ship.
Wouldn't that be the screws? Just saying. Okay.
Yeah, okay, technically, yes. At 2:10, the Titanic starts to tilt about 45 degrees. And the steel structure that underlies the ship starts to give way because the weight of the end lifted out of the water is too much for it. At 2:12, the stern raises up out of the water and the bow completely fills with water and starts to grow heavier. At 2:18, the bow rips loose. So the bow starts to sink into the ocean. The stern, meanwhile, rises up almost completely vertical because, it has lots of air still within it.
Yeah.
So the stern is free of the bow. The bow is now sinking into the ocean. And then the stern starts to sink at 2:20 in the morning. And at 2:29, the bow hits the ocean floor.
Mm-hmm.
At 2:56, the stern hits the ocean floor. And the stern is in really bad shape because it had so much air inside of it. While it was sinking, there were implosions mm-hmm. within the ship itself because the pressure that was building up just ended up the pressure from outside the ship and the air pressure inside the ship created this situation where because it wasn't truly flooded like the bow was,
mm-hmm.
You had these implosions, and which is why if you ever see any of the documentaries where there are submarines that are exploring the ship,
mm-hmm.
the stern looks destroyed. The bow looks almost preserved and the stern does not. And that's why.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. this is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So with that in mind, looking at some of the messages that were sent out. So at 11:40, you have the collision. At 12:15 in the morning on April 15th, because we've just passed midnight, the Titanic sends out a message to any ship, says CQD Titanic, and gives the coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 12:17, just 2 minutes later, that's when they write CQD, CQD, SOS, Titanic, gives the position, require immediate assistance, come at once, we struck an iceberg, sinking.
Mm-hmm.
And at 12:20 a.m., they message specifically to the Carpathia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they a couple ships responded.
Yep.
Pretty much right away. The Frankfurt and the Olympic, the sister ship of the Titanic, were quite a distance away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The Frankfurt was about 170 miles or so away, and the Olympic was almost 500 miles away. But here again, this high-tech transmitter that the Marconi company had on there, there were a lot of ships that were aware of what was going on.
Yeah,
now, whether or not they could make it there in time to save people.
Right.
Thankfully, the Carpathia was somewhat close, although the Californian
was the closest. But here's the issue, is that after the Californian operator received the message saying, shut up, the Californian operator decided, it's time to go to bed. I'm not paid enough to put up with this. And closed down shop and went to bed. And that's, like we said, that was regular practice on board ships. So that after you reach the end of your shift, you closed down, you turned off the radio, and you caught some sleep. So that's exactly what the operator of the Californian did. If the operator had stayed on, then the Californian could have responded much more quickly, potentially anyway, than the Carpathia did.
And probably would have saved
some of the people who died would have likely have been rescued had the Californian been able to respond in time.
However, never mind. That was one of the things that kind of got me, sort of a gut-wrenching feeling when the operator told him to shut up.
Yeah, so, at 12:25 in the morning, the Carpathia sends a message to the Titanic saying, "Shall I tell my captain? Do you require assistance?" And a minute later, Titanic responds with, "Yes, come quick." And then at 12:32, so 6 minutes after that, the Carpathia message is putting about and heading for you. So at that point, the Carpathia does start to make its way toward the Titanic. And the messages continued from the Titanic, and they get pretty, it's pretty rough. SOS, Titanic sinking by the head. We are about all down, sinking. It was at 12:40 in the morning. And then at,
they kept sending messages as fast as they could.
Yeah.
Hoping that somebody else might be close enough and they might tune in and come help.
Which is why they kept on switching between CQD and SOS. And, it continued all the way up to the ship actually sinking. I mean, let's see if I've got the very last message here. I think the very last one is, right at around between 2:15 a.m. and 2:25 a.m. So this is right about when the ship itself was going under.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that the last message was SOS, SOS, CQD, CQD, Titanic. We are sinking fast. Passengers are being put into boats. Titanic. And that was the last message. And, as I said, Bride, escaped. He survived, but Phillips went down with the ship. He was supposedly signaling all the way up until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I read one report that said that Bride had said when he came in to check on Phillips to try and tell him to leave, Phillips was still there sending out messages frantically and listening for messages while another passenger or a crew member was trying to remove Phillips' life vest.
Yes.
And that Phillips was just letting it happen because he was stuck, you know, staying at his post,
mm-hmm.
Which shows a level of dedication that I think borders on the fanatic. And it also is interesting in that I remember I read an interview with a guy who specifically said that in this day, Phillips and Bride could be considered the computer nerds of that era. Like these were guys who were absolutely obsessed with radio and they loved it and they lived it and that this was just something that they found engrossing and fascinating. And that kind of, I can kind of understand that. I've met some, computer nerds, and I say that term with all affection, who I think you would have to use a crowbar to separate them from their computer. So it's a very similar situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a bit about some of the reasons why the Titanic did sink. The damage to the hull, didn't look as severe as what you might imagine, something, you know, like a hole being large enough to sink a ship like the Titanic. But
mm-hmm.
part of the problem was that these gashes that hit along the side of the hull, some of them were quite long and bridged more than one watertight compartment.
Yeah, and there were a lot of things going on here. Part of a good bit of it was apparently human error.
Yeah.
I mean, not just in making mistakes like, civil mistakes,
right.
Not ignoring the messages, not, you know, overconfidence in the ship's ability to take on an iceberg.
Right.
But also, you know, the way they, from what I understand, they left some of the watertight compartments open, which allowed water to pass from one to another. And, you know, there were apparently some mistakes in constructing the ship, too.
Yeah.
The steel apparently was particularly brittle.
Yeah, there's a
and of course I'm sure that the cold water didn't help anything.
That's actually a real problem. The steel was semi kilned low carbon steel,
mm-hmm.
and the process of making the steel introduced some sulfur mm-hmm. into the mix, and steel with a high sulfur content that is put to low temperatures and experiences a high velocity impact tends to be brittle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally the way steel would react if you had created, you know, a very strong steel mix, it would normally deform.
Mm-hmm.
So it bends, right? So, I mean, we've all seen steel that's been dented.
Sure.
So
every time I go shopping and look at the cars in the parking lot.
There you go. So there, you know, and that's just the ones that he hits. But steel tends to bend. It deforms first before it breaks. Now, when it's brittle, it'll break rather than deform. And so that's a bad thing. You know,
yes.
If it deforms, it can hold on to its integrity a little bit better than it could if it just shears away. So there are plenty of pictures online where you can see steel bars that were, that have high sulfur content versus ones that don't, that are subjected to temperatures that the Titanic would have been subjected to at that time and hit with a high velocity weight. And regular steel bends, and the steel that was the same sort of composite as that was used in the Titanic breaks in half. Like there's no bending. It just shatters.
Mm-hmm.
So that was part of the problem, was that the steel just shattered rather than bent in. And so water was able to come in, without problem. Another issue was that these watertight compartments, they had watertight doors that could drop automatically or manually.
Mm-hmm.
And they did seal those. But the issue there is that the watertight compartments only went so far up. They went above where the water line is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you've got the water line on the ship. Anything that's above that water line, the walls stopped. So there was a gap there in these quote unquote watertight compartments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when these six compartments or five or six compartments started to take on water, it made the ship start to list.
Mm-hmm.
Started to move to one side. As we mentioned earlier, the bow was starting to go under. And once that happened, the water started to make the ship tilt. And as it was tilting, the water could flow over parts of these walls.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ship was no longer upright. So that meant that water could start spreading into other unaffected watertight compartments, quote unquote watertight compartments. Because since the walls didn't go all the way up. So you had water rushing into otherwise safe compartments, and it just made the problem worse. In fact, I've seen some reports that suggest that perhaps if the Titanic didn't have all those watertight compartments, and instead the water was free to just flow across the entire underwater surface of the boat, the ship still would have sunk, but it would have sunk in a less...
In a more controlled manner.
In a more controlled manner. It would have taken longer, so rescue ships would have had more time to get there, perhaps rescuing many more people. And it wouldn't have necessarily pitched over and broken in half,
mm-hmm.
like it actually did. So it would have just started to lose buoyancy and continue to sink, which would have been much better news for everyone involved, obviously. So part of the issue we have here is a system that was designed to help prevent sinking actually contributing to sinking,
right.
Potentially anyway. This is all based upon a lot of after-the-fact supposition, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The other issues involved are the fact that they didn't have enough lifeboats aboard. And part of that was that the ship was so new that
mm-hmm.
there wasn't a designation for how many lifeboats it should have. Most reports I see say that it had 16 lifeboats aboard, that there were actually more than that, but the 16 lifeboats were the ones that were ready to go because they were supposed to have two rows of these lifeboats, but one row was removed for aesthetic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I mean, it was, it was unsinkable, right? There wasn't any reason to have lifeboats.
Well, yeah, and... the 16 lifeboats were, that was the bare minimum for a ship of 10,000 tons,
mm-hmm.
as dictated by an authorization council. But the problem was that the Titanic was larger than that, but the regulations hadn't caught up to the innovation.
Right.
The 10,000 tons was as big as it got in the regulations. So there was no correcting for the fact that Titanic was actually larger than what the top level was in these regulations. So it had the bare minimum. So that was also another issue.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There were pretty much everything that could go wrong. I guess not everything that could go wrong did go wrong because people did survive, which is good.
Yeah, and that radio system kept on going. As long as the telegraph operators were able to power it. But that was the problem that once, the water began flooding, the areas of the ship that provided power, the turbines.
Yeah.
Then the system started losing power. The signal was much less effective. And there are reports too of communications between other ships where they're explaining, you know, hey, this is what's going on. The Titanic's going down. We need to get over there. Who needs help? You know, messages back and forth to explain. And you start to get, in the early hours of the 15th, you start to see things like, well, we haven't heard from them since, you know, such and such time. We haven't heard from them since midnight. We haven't heard from them. Even though they broadcast since then, the power was going down and their signal strength was waning until the power went out. So, you know, that system worked very, very well.
Yeah.
Of course, after, you know, this tragedy, they started trying to find ways to prevent it from happening again.
Mm-hmm.
In 1912, July 5th, the International Radio Telegraph Convention, and they had confirmed SOS as the distress call roughly about the time the Germans had. But again, you know, not everyone had adopted it.
Right.
You know, obviously the Titanic's operators knew about it, but they were sticking with the Marconi CQD.
Yeah, they'd alternate back and forth going for whatever would help.
But they signed the order in London on July 5th, 1912, again, formally adopting SOS as the International Maritime Distress Signal, mm-hmm. Which was supposed to take effect in 1913. The United States had their own radio act that was passed on August 13th, 1912. And they basically started – countries began working together to prevent another tragedy like this. They convened an international convention for the safety of life at sea, designed to agree on standards to use. They started using May Day as the spoken distress call once radio communications were given by voice over radio on November 25th, 1927. And they started using 500 kilohertz as the new frequency.
Yes.
So it was a dedicated frequency for distress signals, which, again, this helps out substantially because you can send person to person, you know, hey, having a lovely time. Hey, look at the iceberg.
I say, old man.
Yeah, exactly. You can have that on one channel.
Shuffleboard is capital. Capital.
And then, you know, hey, I need help, Mayday, on 500 kilohertz.
Right.
They began to change that as time went on, too. But they would, you know, the Titanic really galvanized maritime distress procedures
yes.
much more than they had been before. It was a new technology back yep. in these days. And so they said, you know, hey, we can use this to our advantage. Let's agree on something we can all, you know, use together.
And eventually by 1948, regulations were in place that required ships exceeding 1600 tons. They must have a wireless apparatus on them.
Yes.
And part of that was so that they could respond to distress calls, not just be able to make them, but respond to them or relay them.
Yeah.
Because again, depending upon the ship's position and its own ability to transmit, those signals might not go to the best, you know, the potential rescuers. So, and then you had ships also employing more operators so that they could have a continual shift of operators so that you didn't have times when the station was unmanned.
That and you didn't have the likelihood that your telegraph operators are worn out.
Yes.
It was suggested in one of the passages I read that the Titanic's two radio operators were so busy sending personal messages that by the time the accident happened and they hit the iceberg that they were both pretty worn out.
Yeah, they're working on exhaustion.
And frankly, that might have been part of the reason behind the shut up.
Yes.
Because he was, I'm trying to send messages here. Get out of my way. I got to do this so I can go to bed.
Definitely.
That might have played a part.
And we also saw developments in things like sonar. Sonar was in the experimental stages when the Titanic launched.
It did exist, but the Titanic wasn't equipped with it,
right.
Nor did it have radar, which probably could have, I assume, could have, or at least these days, can detect the top of an iceberg.
Yeah. So those innovations began, there was a lot more focus put toward them in order to employ them in things like cruise travel and just travel in general so that ships could be much more safe. It wouldn't be until the 1970s, the late 1970s, that we would develop a technology sufficient to let us actually explore for the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
We knew generally where it went down, but it was in very deep water, 12,500 feet, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
Pretty deep.
That's very deep.
Yeah, so it wasn't until the late 1970s that that people began to develop the technology that would be capable of diving down to that depth and getting information. One of the first was a Texas oil magnate named Jack Grimm.
Hmm.
And Grimm really poured a whole lot of money into launching some expeditions to try and find the Titanic in 1980, 1981, 1983. But because of some bad weather, some equipment problems, and trying to find these two pieces of a giant ship in an enormous ocean, they were unsuccessful. It wouldn't be until a few years later, it was on September 1st, 1985, that the very first video image of the Titanic was captured. by a submarine. And since then, we have had several expeditions down to the Titanic, mm-hmm. some of which have retrieved things from the Titanic and brought them back up. A lot of different pictures were taken. And in fact, James Cameron, and of course, the director of the documentary Titanic, ended up.
you should clarify that because
okay.
We did
James
talk about
Cameron, the director of a film called Titanic, which was not a documentary, also did a documentary about the Titanic. He captured a lot
See?
Of. Yeah, I know. That's why I went ahead and I broke my joke for the purposes of this one podcast. Yes, so he actually did do quite a bit of this research. He was involved in it pretty heavily. Mm-hmm. And of course, Cameron has continued his fascination with the deep sea. He's since gone down deeper than any other person in the world, which is pretty darn fascinating.
Down in the trenches.
Yep, down in the trenches.
No, really.
Yeah, really. It's a story that still fascinates today, 100 years later. And if you're ever in a city that has a Titanic museum exhibition, there was a traveling one a few years ago that was going from one museum to the next. I've actually seen it a couple of times. And it is really interesting to kind of get a look at what not just the problems that the Titanic faced, but what life was actually like aboard the ship, what the first class passengers, what their experience was, as opposed to the third class passengers down in steerage. I mean, the difference is night and day. They had Turkish baths on board the Titanic.
It was an amazing vessel.
It was phenomenal. And meanwhile, they have Turkish baths for the first class passengers. They had two bathtubs for steerage.
Yeah. Just to go into the technology developments too. A lot of what they developed in the early and mid 20th century in the follow up to the Titanic disaster stayed in place for a long time.
Uh-huh.
The mid 70s saw the beginning of a telecommunications network specifically designed for seagoing vessels, mm-hmm. Satellite network called Inmarsat. As a matter of fact, the first satellites started working in 1982. And they started changing the frequencies. Now, 156.525 megahertz. And there is a satellite emergency position beacon that works at 406 megahertz or 1.6 gigahertz. Now, of course, that was in effect when the Costa Concordia hit a reef off the coast of Italy, that probably you're aware of. That happened earlier the year. We're recording this on January 13th, 2012. And I think it's ironic for two reasons. One, it does sort of underscore the fact that, these measures are still very, very necessary. And, the fact that it was a very large, ocean liner with passenger liner that, ripped a big gash in the side of the hull, traveling in this case, not an iceberg, but rocks. They were moving with emergency power. Thankfully, most of the people got off that ship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Apparently there were not any distress calls sent to the Global Maritime Distress and Safety System, GMDSS,
mm-hmm.
to let the Italian Coast Guard know. So that would have probably helped.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, obviously there are some, we could put as many systems as we like in place unless people actually follow them and activate them. It doesn't really help.
From what I've read, it was passengers calling the Coast Guard on their cell phones that let them know that something was awry.
Yeah, that's not good.
No.
Oh, and this will be a nice little way to finish this.
Okay.
So back in 1912 when the ship was built, the cost was about $7.5 million.
Wow.
So today that would cost $167 million.
That is quite a princely sum.
It is a princely sum. It was also really expensive to travel aboard it.
Yes.
Remember that a first class ticket would be the equivalent of around 70 grand today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
a lot of money to go across the ocean.
Yes, it is. And to think about, you know, I think, too, the other reasons, you know, for the Titanic going down in history. Sorry, no pun intended. Don't want to make light of that. That were, you know, the famous passengers who were on board, some of whom died, some of whom didn't, or the people who didn't go. You hear about the famous people who didn't make it, you know, people who went on to do, you know, things that have gone down in history. Like, would that have happened?
Right.
You know, that's its first voyage, the fact that it was supposed to have been unsinkable, you know, all these things tied together. But it certainly
spawned at least two musicals.
Yes.
The Unsinkable Molly Brown and Titanic.
Yep. Yeah, it's just captured a place in our imagination and in our technology. So it's, you know, it played an important part in our lives.
Yep. So, guys, if you have any suggestions for future topics, perhaps things that happened in the past, let us know. Send us an email. Our email address is textup@discovery.com, or let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is textup, HSW, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my six decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.